Muhammad Rasulullah, the Apostle of Mercy, by Abul Hasan Ali Nadwi. Chapter 10, The Decisive Battle of Badr. In the second year of Hijrah, during the month of Ramadan, the Muslims came up against the infidels in the decisive battle of Badr, which was to prove the turning point not only in the destiny of Islam, but of the entire human race. That all the conquests gained, laurels won, and empires founded by the Muslims came from the triumphant success achieved by a handful of followers of Islam on that crucial moment. God has identified it as a day of discrimination. Quote, "If you believe in Allah and that which we revealed unto our slave on the day of discrimination, the day when the two armies met." Unquote. The circumstances that led to this battle were that the Prophet got the news of a great caravan with lots of money and merchandise was being led by Abu Sufyan on its way back from home to home of Makkah from Syria. A state of belligerency already existed between the Muslims and the Quraysh, for the Quraysh were doing all in their power to play mischief with the Muslims, to impede their progress and to liquidate their rising power. They were sparing none of their financial and physical resources to get this job done, and their armed detachment very often waded deep into the limits of Medina and its pastures to pounce upon the Muslims. Now, Abu Sufyan was the worst enemy of Islam, and therefore the Prophet asked the Muslims to get ready to intercept the caravan. Since, however, it was a commercial caravan, the Prophet merely wanted to surprise it. Elaborate arrangements required for giving fight to an army were not considered necessary. Informed of the Prophet's decision to intercept him, Abu Sufyan sent a courier to Makkah with an urgent request for reinforcements. Therefore, an armed force was hastily collected by the Quraysh. All the notable chiefs of Makkah accompanied the force, to which was enlisted every man available from the neighboring tribes, and the army was sent forth to succor the caravan. The Quraysh were flared up that hardly a man remained behind in Makkah. Faithfulness of the Ansar. News came to the Prophet that a strong Makkan army was on its way to engage him in battle. The Prophet thereupon summoned his followers and asked for their advice. He readily wanted to know the reaction of the Ansar, for their original pact with the Prophet implied them defending him in Medina and did not put them under an obligation to take part in military expeditions outside of Medina. The Muhajireen responded first and assured him of their help and loyalty. The Prophet, however, repeated this question, and the Muhajireen gave the same reply, but the Ansar put the same question again for the third time. Now the Ansar realized that the question was meant for them. Sa'd bin Mu'az immediately got up to say in reply, quote, "O Prophet of God, it seems as if you mean us and you want to have our answer. Perhaps you think, O Prophet of God, that the Ansar have undertaken to help you on their own territory alone. I want to tell you on behalf of the Ansar that you may lead us wherever you like, align with whomever you desire, or break relations with whom you may think of. You may take whatever you desire from our property and give us as much as you want, for whatever you would take from our property would be dearer to us than what you would leave for us. We would follow whatever you command us. By God, if you go ahead until you reach Barq Ghimdan, we will accompany, and by God, if you plunge into the sea, we will plunge in with you." Unquote. Then Miqdad got up and said, "O Prophet of God, we will not say, as the children of Israel said to Moses, 'Go you and your Lord fight, we will sit here.' We will fight with you on your left and on to your right, in your front and in your back." The Prophet was delighted to hear the answers given by his companions. He said, "Go ahead and have glad tidings." Enthusiasm of the youngsters. When the detachment went out from Medina, a boy of 16, whose name was Umair bin Abi Waqqas, also accompanied the warriors stealthily, because he feared that if the Prophet saw him, he would ask him to turn back, as he was a minor. When his elder brother Sa'd bin Abi Waqqas saw Umair avoiding the gaze of the Prophet, he asked him the reason for it. Umair replied, "I'm afraid that the Prophet would turn me back, as I'm a minor, but I want to take part in the battle. God may perhaps honor me with martyrdom." When the Prophet saw Umair, he asked him to go back, but he started crying and was allowed to stay on, Umair was killed in the battle and thus his heart's desire was fulfilled. Strength of the contending parties. The Prophet rallied four to the battlefield with 313 combatants who were not well equipped. The Muslims had 70 camels and 2 horses on which men rode by turns. There was nothing to distinguish the soldiers from the captains, not even the eminent companions like Abu Bakr and Umar or the Prophet himself bore any mark of distinction. The standard of the army was given to Musa bin Umair. The flag of the Muhajirin was with Ali bin Abu Talib and that of the Ansar was with Sa'd bin Mu'az. On coming to know of the approaching Muslim army, Abu Sufyan turned off his caravan towards the sea coast. He also sent word to the Quraysh army when he was at a safe distance from the Muslims to go back as it was no purpose for them to proceed ahead. The Makkans too wanted to turn home but Abu Jahl insisted on going ahead for punishing the raiders. His force was of 1,000 strong with all the veterans and noted battlers of Makkah and all were too well armed. They did not want to lose the opportunity of giving a battle to the Muslims. On coming to know of the names of the Makkan chiefs accompanying Abu Jahl, the Prophet remarked, "The Makkah has brought its pieces of heart to you." The democratic way. The Quraysh army halted on reaching a valley near Badr, while the Muslims pitched their tents on the farther side of the army. Hubab bin Munzir, however, called upon the Prophet to inquire, "O Prophet of God, is this a place which God has sent, ordered you to occupy so that we cannot leave this place, or is it a matter of opinion or military tactics?" He said, "No," replied the Prophet, "it is a matter of opinion and military tactics, and everything can be done to ambush the enemy." Hubab then said, "O Prophet of God, it is not the place we should occupy." He suggested another place nearest to the water, which was more suitable for giving a battle to the enemy. The Prophet agreed and ordered him to move men over there. The Prophet and some of his companions were first to occupy the new camping ground in the night. A cistern was built and filled with water, for which the enemy was also allowed to replenish its drinking vessels. God sent down rains during the night, which caused the infidels great inconvenience by hindering their movement, but it received and revived the vanishing spirit of the Muslims by making the weather pleasant and turned off the soft sand of the valley into a compact surface. This was a sign of victory, as God disclosed in his verse, quote, "And send down water from the sky upon you, that thereby God might purify you and remove from you the fear of shaitan and make strong your hearts and firm your feet thereby." The Prophet of God as a general. We find on this occasion the Prophet exhibiting marvelous qualities of a military tactician and a strategist, which shine with his eternal and universal guidance of mankind, providing yet another indication that the inspiration drawn by him was from a supernatural agency. The way he drew up his troops for battle, the actions he took to meet the sudden and surprise attack by the superior forces and the deployment of his troops to win the battle against the enemy superior in number needs to be studied to appreciate the military genius of the Prophet. A booth of palm branches was erected for the Prophet on an elevation overlooking the battlefield. Thereafter, the Prophet traversed the plain and pointed out the spots to his companions where the chiefs of the armies were to fall dead. As it was found later on this, his prediction proved entirely correct and not even a single Qurayshi chief was found slain at a place different from that indicated by the Prophet of God. When the two armies came face to face, the Prophet said, "O God, here come the Quraysh in their vanity and pride. They contend with you, calling your Prophet a liar." It was the night of Friday, the 17th of Ramadan, with the first flush of the morning. The entire force of the Quraysh streamed out into the valley and ranged itself into the battlefield, while the Muslims arrayed themselves before them in the foreground. Beseechment and the entreaty to the Lord. The Prophet sent the ranks of his force in order and returned to the hut with Abu Bakr. Pointing his head on the dust, he supplicated and beseeched God with divine succor. He knew well full that if the victory in the battle was to go by numbers and strength, prowess and weapons of the two forces, the result was a foregone conclusion. He had no illusions, for he fully realized that the Muslims were weak and few and the enemy was strong and numerous. He clearly saw the balance inclining in favor of the Quraysh, and now he sought to counterpoise it with a heavier weight. Lamenting, he entreated the Lord of the heavens and the earth, who shapes all ends and means, to come to the assistance of the Muslims in that honor and hour of difficulty. He appealed to God, "O God, if you were to exterminate this small group of Muslims, you will not be worshipped on this earth anymore." In a state of extreme exaltation, his hands raised in prayer and on bended knees, he sent up the prayers, "O God, fulfill what you have promised to me. Help us, you, our Lord." So lost was he in prayer that the mantle on his shoulder fell on the ground. Abu Bakr was so distressed to see the Prophet in tears, consoled and comforted him. The true position and station of the Muslims. The prayer of the Prophet, although brief, speaks volumes of his pure-heartedness and his companions and his unflinching confidence in the succor of God, in the help from God, in the hour of crisis, his feelings of humbleness and meekness before God, and the serenity of his own heart. At the same time, the Prophet's prayers set forth in terms as clear as crystal the true position and station of his followers amidst the nations of the world. It brings out the worth, utility, as well as the requestiveness of the people who are charged with the responsibility of taking his mission ahead. It is, in fact, a plain and clear annunciation that the responsibility lying on these people is to surrender to the will of God, to bend down their necks before God with a humble heart, and to summon the people to yield obedience to God, and that the Prophet's prayer was answered by God with a resounding victory, which was beyond the bounds of every reason and probability. It was but a demonstration of the truth of his affirmation about the true character of his followers. The Prophet then came back to his men and delivered a short speech, stressing the merits of fighting in the way of God. In the meantime, Utbah bin Rabia and his brother and his son Shaiba and Walid stepped forward in the fashion of the Arabs. Three of the Ansar came forward to give them battle, but the Quraysh said, "Who are you?" "We are the Ansar," they answered. "You are of a noble blood," said the Quraysh, "but send our peers, the men of our own tribes." The Prophet now said, "Go ahead, O Ubaidah bin Harith, Hamza and Ali. Advance all three of you to oppose them." The Quraysh then said, "Yes, you are noble and our peers." Now, Ubaidah, being the eldest, challenged Utbah. Hamza faced Shaiba, and Ali came full tilt against Walid. With a swift dispatch, Hamza and Ali slew their opponents, but Ubaidah and Utbah still struggled with one another. Hamza and Ali then made a dead set at Utbah and did away with him. They bore away and brought Ubaidah back to their ranks, for he had been injured. Later on, Ubaidah died of the excessive loss of blood. The general attack. The Quraysh were now filled with fury. With a cry of rage, they darted and assailed the Muslim champions. Whereupon the Prophet cried, "Rise to paradise, whose breath is equal to the heavens and the earth." The first martyr, Umair bin Hammam, heard the Prophet's call and asked, "Is that paradise equal to the heavens and the earth, O Prophet of God?" "Yes," replied the Prophet. "Fine, fine," he said. And when the Prophet asked what he made him say that, he said, "Nothing, O Prophet of God, but I hope I might be amongst its inhabitants." The Prophet told him that he would be amongst them. Umair then took some dates out of his quiver and began to eat them. But suddenly he said, "If I live till my date last, it would mean delaying it for long." So he threw away the dates in his hand and ran to the battlefield and fought with the enemy until he was dead. He was the first martyr on the day of Badr. The Muslims fought the Meccans like a firm, united, disciplined army. with the name of God on their lips. Up to the moment the prophet had remained quiet and collected, but now he charged into the ranks of the enemies. None was now braver than the prophet. None dared engage the enemy so closely. God now sent down host of heavens to the help of the Muslims. The enemy seemed to be giving away to the Muslims and was driven back by the fierce charge of the invisible battlers. As is said in the Quran, quote, "When your Lord inspired the angel, saying, I am with you, so make those who believe stand firm. I will throw fear into the heart of those who disbelieve, then smite their necks and smite on them each finger," unquote. Full of enthusiasm, everybody seemed to be bent upon outdoing others in a deed of bravery and to be honored with martyrdom. Even close friends and full brothers viewed with one another, vied with one another to excel the other. Abdurrahman bin Auf says, quote, "I was fighting in my rank on the day of Badr when I saw on my right and left two young men, and I did not feel quite happy to see them on my sides. Suddenly, one of them asked me in a low voice so that his companion should not hear him, 'Oh, my uncle, show me Abu Jahl.' I said, 'Oh, my brother's son, what would you do with him?' He said, 'I have vowed before God that I will kill him when I see him, or he shall be killed, or I shall be killed by him.' And the other boy spoke to me likewise in a low voice so that his companion would not hear. I pointed out to them, and they threw themselves upon him like two hawks and struck him down, and they were the sons of Afra." Unquote. When Abu Jahl was killed, the Prophet of God remarked, "This is Abu Jahl, the Fir'aun of this Ummah." The Great Victory. The day of Badr drew towards its close with the Muslims flushed with success and the infidels trampled into the dust. On this occasion, the Prophet paid homage to God, saying, quote, "Praise be to Allah who fulfilled his promise and helped his servant and alone routed all the hordes." That was exactly what happened, for the Quran also says, quote, "Allah had given you victory at Badr when you were small. You observe your duty to Allah in order that you may be thankful." The Prophet ordered that the dead amongst the infidels should be thrown into a pit. As the Muslims threw them, the Prophet went there and said, standing over the pit, "O people of the pit, did you find what your Lord said is true? For I have found what my God promised me is true." On the day of Badr, 70 infidels were slain and an equal number were taken captives. Casualties amongst the Muslims were 14, 6 belonging to the Muhajirin and 8 belonging to the Ansar. The Prophet returned to Medina as the head of a victorious army. The enemies of Islam were appalled and disheartened by the victory at Badr. The Prophet's prestige rose in Medina and his influence gained a hold amongst the surrounding districts. A large number of people who had been hesitant so long in Medina accepted the faith of the Prophet. Abdullah bin Rawaha was one of the two people sent by the Prophet in advance to Medina before he returned to the city. He gave the good news to the people, saying, "Rejoice, O Ansar, for the Prophet of God is safe and the infidels have been killed and captured." He enumerated the names of the Quraysh nobles and chiefs killed in the battle to every man he met. Children accompanied him singing songs of joy. Some took the news to be true while the others were confounded. When the Prophet returned to Medina, followed by the prisoners of war with the Prophet's slave Shukran keeping an eye on them, when the Prophet reached Ruha, the Muslims met and congratulated him and his companions on the victory God had given him. The defeat suffered by the polytheists plunged Makkah into gloom. There was not even a single house in the city which did not go mourning. The Makkans stood aghast and agitated. Abu Sufyan swore that until he had fought with the Prophet again, he would not take a bath. The suppressed Muslims of Makkah on other had sighed a relief and felt elated. Ties of blood or faith. One of the captives was Abu Aziz bin Umair bin Hashim, a full brother of Musa bin Umair. The two brothers were standard bearers of the two rival armies. Musa bin Umair passed by his brother when an Ansari young man was tying up the hands of Abu Aziz bin Umair. Musab called out, Bind him fast, for his mother is sufficiently rich. Perhaps she would pay a big ransom. Turning to Musab in amazement, Abu Aziz said, Brother, is it you who gives that advice? You are not my brother, replied Umair. He is my brother who is tying your hands. Treatment of the captives. The Prophet ordered his followers to treat the prisoners generously. He said, deal kindly with them. Abu Aziz bin Umair relates that he was lodged with an Ansari family after being brought to Medina after Badr. They gave him bread on the morning and evening meals, but they themselves took only dates as ordered by the prophets. If anybody had a morsel of bread, he gave it to Abu Aziz, although he felt ashamed and refused it, but they returned it untouched and insisted on him eating it. The ransom of the prisoners. The Prophet accepted ransom for the prisoners according to their means. The Quraysh kinsmen of the captive paid sums of money to their relatives, while those who could not pay any ransom were set free without any payment. The Prophet's uncle, Abbas bin Abu Muttalib, his cousin, Aqil bin Abu Talib, his son-in-law, Abdul As Arabi, who was married to his daughter Zainab, were among the prisoners of war, but none was shown any favor. All were treated like other captives. There were some prisoners who were unable to pay any ransom, but they were literate. They were allowed to earn their freedom by teaching the art of reading and writing to the children of Ansar, 10 children being taught by every prisoner. Zayd bin Thabit was one of those who had been taught by the captives of Badr. The importance attached to enlightenment, reading and writing by the Prophet of Islam was exemplified by his decision on this occasion, needs no further explanation. Other expeditions. The ironclad oath of Abu Sufyan, as mentioned earlier, bound him to refrain from even splashing water over his head until he wreaked his vengeance on the Muslims. He came to Medina with 200 raiders to acquit himself of the oath and called upon Salam bin Mishkam, the chief of the Jewish tribe of Banu Nadir, who entertained him with food and drink and also gave the information he desired about Medina. Thereupon, Abu Sufyan succeeded in getting away after killing two of the Ansar. The Prophet got a warning of the raiders and went out in their pursuit. Abu Sufyan eluded the Prophet, but was obliged to throw away a good deal of his provisions consisting of food grains, especially parched corn, and hence the expedition goes by its name, Al-Sawiq. The Jews of Medina, who first broke their covenant with the Prophet, were Banu Qaynuqa. They contended with the Muslims and spoke slightly of the Prophet. Ultimately, the Prophet besieged them, the siege lasting for 15 nights, until Banu Qaynuqa surrendered unconditionally. The siege was raised on the recommendation of Abdullah bin Ubay, the leader of the hypocrites. Banu Qaynuqa conducted a market in Medina and practiced goldsmithry. They were forced to leave the city, although the number could bear arms amongst them was 700. Ka'b bin Ashraf meets his doom. Ka'b bin Ashraf was a prominent leader of the Jews, an impeccable enemy of Islam. He always did his utmost to get the Prophet into trouble. He was also a poet of considerable standing, availing his talents to compose derogatory verses against the honor of Muslim women, an act intolerable enough to try one's patience. Immediately after the Battle of Badr, he went all the way to Makkah to cry out vengeance with inflammatory verses and stirred up the Quraysh to even the score of their defeat at Badr. Nevertheless, he returned to Medina, where, in his indomitable conceit, he continued his mischievous propaganda against Islam. When the Prophet heard about his return to Medina and said to his companion, Ka'b bin Ashraf has offended God and his Prophet. Who will get rid of him? A few people belonging to the Ansar immediately offered their services and killed that enemy of God. Jazakallah khair. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.